So it's July 3rd today, and this is a week before Asava Puja, which is the day right before our Vasa begins. So I was talking to someone about that today, that in a week we'll begin what's called the Rains Retreat, and that's very confusing to people because it's usually 3 months of no rain, but we call it the Rains Retreat because that's what it's during the monsoon season in India. And so our tradition, although we could kind of follow it during our rainy season in the winter, but we've decided, and I think as far as I know, almost all Buddhist monks that I've heard of follow the same season, just follow the Indian season, even though it's very different around certain parts of the world. One practical reason is that it is a time for us that we're not supposed to be engaging in very much travel at all. In fact, the longest we can be gone is 7 days. It works out to be 6 nights and 7 days. And we have certain reasons that there are only very specific reasons that we can go during that time, such as looking after lay people who are in distress or another monastery or sangha that similarly needs help for some reason. And a couple of other reasons that are sort of very specific, and so there's not a lot of movement. That's the point. During the Vasa, the monks make a determination to stay for 3 months in the monastery. And for our training, we do that with samaneras and anagarkhas as well. So they're expected to make the same type of determination and stick around. And it's not a small thing. I remember when I was in anagarkha, there was another anagarkha, and he couldn't get through the lines. We're supposed to repeat 3 lines, and he couldn't get through it. And another monk was having him recite the lines because he couldn't recite them. But it wasn't because he couldn't remember them. He told me later it's because he was struggling because he didn't want to stay, and he in fact left. So it is something that we're making a determination about. We're making a promise about, and so it's something to do wholeheartedly. Even as monks, we do it in a sort of rote way because we kind of know, yeah, of course, I know I'm staying. But there's this feeling of making this decision. I'm going to stick around no matter what happens. And the Buddha was always practical, so he did allow things like the breaking of the vasa. So if there was a reason that a monk saw that they couldn't stay, such as like there was turmoil in the sangha that was very bad, then there could be a reason to break the vasa. Buddha was always very practical in his approach. So yeah, we're entering this period, and it's each time the monks enter the vasa period, we get another like notch on our belt. That's sort of people will ask us, how many vasas are you? So how many rains periods have you gone through as a monk? And then that each year that goes by that we pass through one of these rains residences or rains retreats, then that's another year added on. But it's not usually a retreat in a way. It's more of just staying put. And one of the things that we engage with much more is learning about our rules. It's called the Vinaya, the Padimokkha. And so we'll have usually about 2 classes a week, 2 hours per class. And this year, Ajahn Yanako has said we're going to go through all of them. So sometimes we pick and choose, and sometimes we skip over ones that aren't so relevant, or we'll just kind of read it very quickly and not talk about it much because it doesn't really come up. But interestingly enough, you can take something from each rule and try to, when you look at it and understand the spirit of it, you can see, oh, that's what the Buddha is really teaching, that there is something that can apply to us for each rule that we follow. And I think I was thinking that this will be my 18th vasa, so this will be my 20th round of being in a monastery for a vasa, and then also, since I don't think I've ever been in a monastery where there hasn't been a vinaya classes, this will be the 20th year of vinaya classes. And sometimes it can seem a bit daunting to go through them, and okay, here we go again, reciting the rules. But actually, the sense that I always have every time is that I'm always learning something new, or I'm remembering something I didn't know, or I'm learning a nuance about the rules that I hadn't understood. And so it's really valuable. Even if those things weren't present, just that sense of reviewing is so helpful. And it does actually cause a sense, while one's in them, of, well, feeling more anxiety sometimes for myself. Oh, I didn't know about that one. But sometimes, not that I didn't know, but I forgot about it or something, or just a sense of like, oh, right, yeah, this is what I want to uphold, or this is important, or I haven't held this up with so much importance. Some of the rules we have are rules that they don't actually have something you would confess about, and or not confess, acknowledge to another monk about. And so they're really in your own purview to really keep and hold and watch over. So in this way, we're able to have these, all of these rules are 227 for the bhikkhus. And yeah, it can seem like, and because of them, I think I've heard of, like, if you count up all the rules that are derivatives from these rules, there's like something like 10,000. And so that can be quite daunting, but they're all practical in a sense. You know, they're all, if one is really following right effort and being very mindful, then it's not difficult to follow these rules. When the Lumpurs were here, it's rare to hear an entire talk about the five precepts and how important it is to keep the five precepts. And they said that even if you're not keeping, if you're keeping just one, you're only 20% of a human being. And if you're not keeping any, you're not a human being. So I was thinking about that a little bit because someone visiting here recently, while we were talking, they were kind of, bugs were kind of coming around them, and there we go, the hand kind of grabbing one, but smushing it or kind of slapping the head when one landed or slapping on the body. And, you know, I've learned not to be preachy, so I didn't really say anything. But it was remarkable to know, like, because this was somebody interested in Buddhism and practice, but that sense of really kind of being careful about what we're doing with harming is not really seen as very important. I remember a story I read about there was a woman and a man who were, they had some business, and they had a client who was going to be, they were sort of interviewing and talking with, and I don't remember what the actual business was, but this client was going to bring in a very substantial amount of money to them if they were going to go with the client, and the client was going to go with them, and the client wanted to, and they went out to lunch together, and so they sat there together, and the woman and the man who were the owners of this business, or the president and CEO, we're talking to this client, interviewing him, what do they want? And while they're interviewing him, they're watching that there is a fly that's landed in his water at the restaurant, landed in his water. And he has a straw, they give a straw with the water. And so they're talking and talking, they see this fly and there's not much thought about it, but the fly is not able to get out of the water. And they watch this man take the straw and push the fly down into the water and drown it, you know, as it's trying to get away, it's trying to get out, and he's just kind of, while he's talking with them, he's just drowning the fly, and then the fly dies, and so they talk, and it's a very kind of good meeting, and it's looks like it's kind of something they're happy about in terms of it could work out with this client, and he was enthusiastic about hiring them and having them, and this was going to be a very substantial amount of money, and so then one of the two, the man or the woman, said, well, they were talking about it, and they said, did you kind of see what he did with that fly? And the other said, yeah, I did. I saw that. And did that kind of disturb you at all? He said, oh, yeah, that really disturbed me. You know, just sort of like seemed to be enjoying while he's just talking to them, just drowning this fly for no reason, just for an enjoyment of killing it. And they decided to not take the deal on. You know, I think it was going to be some $1 million deal. And I said, no, this doesn't seem right. This guy, there's something wrong here. There's something not so nice, just in that little action. And so for people who aren't really kind of thinking about that or don't value life in general, you know, or preserving other beings or not, you know, engaging in non-harming or seeing that, like, that kind of mind state to want to take enjoyment out of the harm of another being, how over time, like, we can see that anytime we do that ourselves when we followed a precept. There's often a lot of regret that occurs, you know, not out of vindictiveness, but just something like where we're not careful and we, you know, we brush our head or our body in some way, and we are aware there's something there and we're trying to get it away, but instead of, we're trying to be gentle, but all of a sudden it rolls under our fingers or something like that occurs, and we end up harming or killing that being, that insect. And after many years of practice, it's interesting being with that and just saying, oh yeah, there is so much regret when that occurs. And, oh, I need to be more careful. Or I've seen, like, when I just think there's a speck of dirt or something, and then I'm trying to clean it up and it turns out to be an insect. We step on something. And the intention's not there, but so that's very clear, but that there's no harm that's actually done in our minds in terms of karma, but we have a sense of, oh, I'd like to be more mindful, and I do regret taking that being's life. Like, there is something valued in another being and preserving that being's desire to live. And that's quite a beautiful thing to remind ourselves of when we experience that and we see that regret coming up, or we see that we made a choice to not harm, or we were careful and we were able to get a spider out or some insect without harming it. And how much of a wholesome feeling that brings up. And so with the Lumpuris talking about these precepts, they're often seen as something that's just sort of often like the extra thing or that thing that I have to do, or right, I'm a good Buddhist, so I better follow these things. But what's often seen is that in the teachings of the people come to around Buddhism, they really, at least in the West, there's a tendency to really focus on meditation and really having peaceful states of mind and being able to deal with difficulty. But without the precepts, we don't realize that the problems that are occurring in our minds when we're meditating are often because we're not following these precepts. We don't have guidelines for ourselves. We don't have things that are assisting us in cultivating a right way to live, a way that doesn't harm others. There's that line that we chant in English, and it's something like, you know, the someone who harms others, or you know, it's not the word harm. I think it's like I can't remember. It's a noise or something a bit softer, where, you know, is not a recluse, can't be called a monk, and we could, you know, just extend that out to really can't be called a Buddhist practitioner. And you know, when the simile of the saw and the Buddhist, that sort of extreme line that we hear, that if someone is sawing us limb for limb, and if we maintain a mind state, aversion towards them, of hatred towards them, then we're not practicing the Buddhist teachings. And that doesn't mean we give up. We just say, oh, I can't, I have aversion, so I can't practice. It means, no, we have some work to do. So one of the very important things that we engage with is right effort. You know, is really trying to notice when we have an intention towards something unwholesome, something that's not beneficial for us or not beneficial for others, and we move towards that thing. We don't give it up. You know, we don't prevent it from arising. So if we, you know, when it's very easy to get annoyed with other people, and we can engage in a habit of that very easily, where it's just a sort of an enjoyable trait. I can recognize this in myself a lot, where it's just like, oh, I'm annoyed with that person, and I think negatively about something they've done. And therein is the abandoning of right effort, because right in that moment is the time to prevent that, to say, okay, there's an inclination towards aversion arising. You know, how can I prevent that from moving any further into the mind? And if it does, and I recognize it too late, and it's there and it's present, then right effort is encouraging us to abandon it, to do our best to make a strong effort to let go of that. And what's so nice about the Buddhist teachings is it's not all just about the unwholesome, it's about the wholesome as well. So we see, you know, that balancing something out like hatred towards another, or just kind of being annoyed, then we bring about, you know, something that's the opposite, you know, wishing well for someone, or thinking kindly of them, or bringing up what we think of as their good qualities in our mind. And so we're directly countering that sense of our perception and believing in our perceptions, believing in our, what the Buddha refers to as mental formations, these activities of minds or actions of minds, the tendency for us to make something out of something. And once, you know, with, when it comes to wholesome states, you know, we're introducing them, and also we're sustaining them. We're trying to maintain them when they have arisen, then we're sustaining them. We're bringing them in, and we're also trying to sustain, maintain them, and continue them in our minds. So that takes a certain sense of knowing what's going on in our minds and not sort of bumbling along and just allowing these states to occur. Just kind of, we're all aware of this, I know how this happens, just kind of one thought to the next. And then all of a sudden, how did I get here? You know, I'm angry, or I'm feeling a lot of desire for something, or I'm, you know, whatever it is. We can be surprised sometimes, how did this happen? And it's just because we haven't been maintaining that sense of mindfulness and a focus on right effort, that continuous kind of, how can I be really aware of any unwholesome states that are either about to come about or they're already in my mind, or to be aware of the wholesome ones that we can bring up for ourselves, or when we notice that they're there, we kind of, oh, this is good to keep going. So one of the things that I was talking about in the beginning of the talk was the Vasa, and this is a period of time that has traditionally been one where the monastic members have other monastics around. And so it's sort of like an encouragement with each other, just to like be on our best behavior. We're having that encouragement just by being around others, that we're all kind of moving towards the same direction, which is hopefully towards, you know, how can I realize Nibbana, and what are the qualities that I need to encourage in myself to do that. And so if you're in a, around a group of others who are doing that, which is hopefully what's occurring in a monastery, then it kind of amplifies the experience. And so the Vasa is a time when there isn't much movement. There aren't fellow monastics kind of coming and going and doing this and that. And so it's a very settled experience. So one of the things that people often take on are called adhitanas during this period of time. And of course, they're taken on during other periods of time, but adhitana means determination. And another thing we can just use is that is sort of change of habit. You know, we're making a strong change of habit. And so people will make some strong determinations during this period. It can be really things that are, you know, can be around things that we're taught about, with just basic teachings around being very aware of how much sleep we're having, or how much we're, the speech that we're getting into, how much we're talking, or what we're, our habits around speech are. Food is a thing that we're often working with. How do we work on the food that's just using it as a necessity rather than something that is primarily as a sense object? We're trying to recognize it more as a necessity. And so these determinations are very good to kind of think about and helpful. And we have the Vasa period as like a 3-month period. And of course, after that 3-month period, if one has made sort of some promises to oneself or determinations, occasionally people will just say, okay, I did it 3 months, now I'm dropping it. And okay, but maybe not. Maybe that's not the wisest thing for oneself. You've gained momentum in this way, and maybe it doesn't need to really be seen of as a change of habit, but a sustaining of that habit. You know, you've now overcome the sense of breaking that habit, and so it should be a lot easier to sustain it. So with making determinations, it's, after having done this for many years, I can see there's a lot of wisdom around it, and there's a lot of stupidity as well, or delusion, confusion. And I find that it's very helpful to try to make resolutions and determinations, but it's mostly helpful when they work and they're helping us, and they're very unhelpful when they're not working and they're kind of making us feel like we're failures. So that occurs based on one thing, and that is the making of that determination. If we don't do that wisely, then it's not going to be beneficial for us. So people might say, okay, like I was talking about sleep. They say, okay, well, the Buddha recommends 4 hours of sleep, so I'm just going to get 4 hours of sleep, and that's it for the whole day. 4 hours of sleep, I'm going for it. And for some people, that might be a valuable experience trying that for 3 months. And even if it's extremely difficult, but for others, it just might not work. I mean, you just might be sleeping through every meditation and not able to focus, and it might be quite difficult. And so it depends on each person. But imagine a person who doesn't know that about themselves and saying like, okay, I'm just going to sleep 4 hours a night or 4 hours during the whole 24-hour period, and that's it. And then they get, and they're doing that for 3 months, and then they get into it, and it's, they can't do it. So it's important that we are very realistic about the determinations we're making. And the most realistic thing that we can ask ourselves is, well, can I do this? Have I done this before? Is this something that I can do? And that's, it sounds like a silly question to ask, but the idealism comes in thinking, oh no, I can, of course I can do 4 hours. I mean, the Buddha did it. I can do it. You know, you might not be the Buddha though. So this is a thing that's important about, you know, kind of thinking about these things, like what am I capable of? What can I realistically do? And what's going to help me when I do it? Like what is actually, is this going to bring about the arising of wholesome states? Is this going to help me sustain those states? Is this going to bring about the a way for me to prevent unwholesomeness and unwholesome behaviors? And my own sense is these things are, you know, determinations are things that can be fairly measured, but not so difficult. And they're definitely not a burden on others. So sometimes people can make determinations and say like, if I don't do this, then I have to go tell somebody else, or they have, you know, we start burdening other people with what it is that we do. So we end up saying, oh, now I have to go tell this person. And we, every day we're finding somebody to go tell because we broke something or we didn't do something. So it's important also to not want to burden others with our own determinations. I think another thing that's helpful is just keep it private. There can be sometimes assistance with others when two people are doing the same thing and say, okay, we're going to do this together. We're going to really go for it. And that can be a helpful thing. But if you're not doing that with another person, then if you start telling everybody your determinations, then it's a bit unpleasant during the Vasa when people keep reminding you, you're not doing that. You said you were going to do that. What's going on now? So this is it's helpful to kind of, not as a way to hide things, but just as to like, this is a personal process for yourself. You're trying to make yourself accountable. But if two people are agreeing on sort of keeping something together, then that's beneficial. I remember another monk, we were both junior monks at the time, and he said, we had these sheets and we were writing down these determinations and crossing them off each day. And I don't know, I had like 20 or 30 and he had like just as many or even more. And he said, do you want to exchange these every week? And I said, what? And really? You know, we're going to see what we're doing. And he said, yeah, let's exchange them each week and read over them and give them back. I said, okay. So I did it. And then every week I'd read his and I thought, this is a pain. I don't actually want to look at somebody else's determinations. Then at the end of the Vasa, I said, okay, I did it. I read all your determinations. He said, oh, I didn't read any of yours. And I go, what? That was such a pain. Why did you have me do that? So in certain ways, it can be helpful involving others, and others, it's just a good thing to kind of keep oneself when you know you're doing something and you follow it and you encourage yourself. So, I mean, I have one determination that was beneficial for me, and it I've talked about this before, but I will say that it was not very beautiful, but I didn't eat breakfast for the Vasa, which several monks don't do anyway. But I decided, okay, I'll just take 17 mouthfuls of food from my bowl, and that's it. And these were very big mouthfuls. But it was probably like a whole egg each or something like that was like the size of them. But I did it, and I was pretty happy because it really did have quite an effect on my practice, quite an effect on my physical well-being. Just everything felt good about it. And I think that doing things like that are beneficial, but I happened to do something that worked. So if I had done something, say, I'm just going to take 5 mouthfuls, that would have been a very painful Vasa, or I probably would have gotten food lodged in my throat because the bites were too big. So we want to do things that are really within a sense of also normality. So it's sort of normal. It's not like I remember there was a monk in Thailand who, he was very famous for making his determination. So one of them was to wear like a, he wore a, these little triangular things that we wear in the monastery sometimes, and it's like an onksai, and it was made of a mosquito screen. So it was just this kind of, basically it looked like he was walking around just with nothing on, but it was, you know, that was his determination for the Vasa. So that was it. I think the abbot at the time was not so happy with it, but there, so we want to try to be normal with what we're doing, normal with what we're determining. And it shouldn't be kind of something that's really out of the ordinary or weird. Like, one monk, I think he blinded himself, like not, he didn't gouge his eyes out, but he taped something over his eyes for a very significant amount of time. And he actually walked him around the monastery without being able to see for a while. And, you can imagine what some of the other monks thought of. So they had to work on determinations around aversion, I think. So it's quite helpful to just be practical with what we're trying to do. And, you know, something like food could be like, okay, I'm only going to take from like a certain number of dishes, right? There's usually like 20 dishes out there or something. So I'm just going to take out of 5 dishes. Or I remember one monk told me, he shared this one before that I thought was quite wise. He said, whatever it is that arises in my mind when I'm walking through the Bindabat line, where the food's been offered, and I see this thing and I have desire for it and think in my mind, that's my favorite. Oh, I'm really glad that's out today. Or, oh, I'm going to have that one. You know, I'm so happy for that or whatever. Then he just immediately says, I'm not taking that. And he reassured me. He said, don't worry. Like, if you like carrots or something, some carrot dish, whatever, and you say, I'm not going to take it, it'll come up another day. You'll find some other favorite, and it's not like you're never going to have this thing ever again, in case there's any anxiety around that. But that's quite a helpful determination, and it's private, and it's something that one can say, yeah, like I did that today. I made that promise to myself, and I didn't take that thing. I knew what that thing was that I wanted in my mind, and I didn't take it. Or, yeah, if you're just taking from 5 dishes, you really get to see like the mind kind of making some concerns about this, like what are they going to be, and you know, how do I do this or that. And then we want to not be, you know, just like you just take the whole dish and empty it into your bowl, so that it's also not being weird in certain ways. Or, you know, just recognizing our patterns. Like I can see certain things that I do when I'm getting food, and I see like, yeah, these are actual patterns that have continued to occur, and if I don't do something about it, it's just continuing that kilesa, that sense of moving in an unwholesome direction, and allowing that to not only arise but be sustained in the mind. And so when we're making determinations, we want to try to be practical. So there might be something that I see, like, okay, I do this every day, and it's something I'm noticing in myself, I'm attached to, or it's like maybe it's bugging other monks or whatever it is. I'm going to try to stop that thing because I don't see it as wholesome. I see that there's some root defilement, there's some problem that I'm doing. Or it could be like with our sleep, you know, what are we doing with our sleep? Is there some way that we can kind of see how we're indulging in sleep? For some people, it's sort of like an eradication or annihilation. And they, you know, I know one monk talks about it, how he just loves sleeping. And it's just such a way for him to kind of just annihilate the world and check out. So we want to see that and be very clear with ourselves. Can we sleep less? Or, you know, sometimes people take a nap. Can we do something much shorter? Whatever it is, you know, we're working on that, and we're focusing on mindfulness. But if the determination is just, I'm going to be more wakeful, that's just not going to help you at all, because that doesn't define anything. So, you know, it might be that when the alarm goes off, I'm going to stand up, right? So that's a nice determination. I'm just going to stand up, or I'm going to, many of us sleep on the floor, so it's just, I'm just going to roll to the other side of the room, just throw my sheet off or whatever is on me and robe or whatever and roll to the other side. And it's not kind of pleasant being out in the open, maybe cold, and just lying on the hard floor, although you might fall asleep again. So standing up is a lot better. But that's a real behavior. You see the difference between something like, I'm going to maintain wakefulness, versus like, I'm going to do this short habit that's going to actually have an impact on my life. The alarm rings, I stand up. or the alarm rings and I stand up and I sustain that for at least 5 minutes before I sit down again. Or I mentioned just like if you don't have a habit of putting away your things neatly, such as like your bedding, you know, the Lumpur Pasan would call it the 5 a.m. puja run out of the kuti. So you visit one of these kutis and the bed's just like the sheets have been thrown off the bed and the person's run down to make sure they get the puja on time. But it's just being clear. But even if somebody is to kind of put away their bedding, are you just kind of haphazardly rolling it up into the corner? Or are you being careful? Is it neat and tidy? And so like just when any of us get back to our dwellings, like what does it look like in the dwelling? Are there things lying around? Are there things that are dirty? Are there things that we're not cleaning? Are there corners we've left? You know, there's spider webs and dirt we're not picking up. Or is it just like just the sense of unkemptness? Because in a kuti, if you see that there are things like hanging over here, over there, or there's an area where you just throw everything, that's your mind. You know, that's the same thing. That's what is inside your mind. It's the junk mind. That's the mind that's kind of like just how we are with our own habits of practicing with our defilements. I'll just keep this aversion over here for a little while. It's okay. I can just be it there for some time. I don't care. I can just be angry at this person because they deserve it and kind of like that anger. So I won't work on that one. And so it's the same thing. You know, we are taking care of our dwellings. And so making determinations around how to keep a dwelling neat and tidy, keeping things like in order, having the bed put away in a neat way, or if you have you leave your bed, some bedding out, then it's clean, it's tidy. You wouldn't be embarrassed about a person walking into your kuti. You'd actually be proud. Say like, oh, nice. Lumpur Pasana visited my kuti. And feel like, yeah, I feel proud of that. He saw that I'm making sure that, and also it's a Sangha property. So it's, we think about it well, and it's like, it's not ours. So when something's not ours, belongs to the greater group where we want to think, oh, I need to take care of this. And so we're very careful, or we're careful with our making sure that the areas where we live are like outside of our kuti are well swept, not just inside. And so this is a, I think it's called this Senasanavata. I think that is what it's in Pali. It's like how we keep our dwelling place clean and tidy and care for it. So these are things we can bring up in our mind. And when we hold them in a way, in terms of like doing these things, it really makes the mind bright and happy and clear. And one feels quite good about living under the Buddha's teachings. And so this isn't just for, of course, for monastics at all. This is for all of us to try to really think about these habits that we can change, these habits that we can try to work with, and those things that we can really look into our own tendencies and say, I need to change this about myself. I need to work on this every day and keep it going. I have certain things that I've kept going for a long time, and yeah, for like a month, I didn't keep up some of them. And I do allow myself to make them up. So I'll double down on them. And it's a pain trying to keep that when I've fallen back or fallen behind on those things. So, and I recognize how helpful it is and how happy I am when I'm, and the self-integrity that's involved when those determinations are kept. And I feel really, you know, I feel really, really good about that. So it brings peace to the mind. It's like following sila, you know, where we're not, we've made a determination not to kill another living being. We follow that, and over a long period of time, we feel very happy that if there's been a mistake, then we recognize that, but we always have the intention, yeah, I'm not going to engage in taking the life of another living being. And for years of doing that, it has an incredible impact on one's mind. So just coming up with some things for yourselves, for the Vasa, some things that might be helpful, or just for anybody during any kind of period of time. Just want to encourage you to do this wisely, to do it in a way that's beneficial for yourself, to do it in a way that's not going to be harming yourself, which it can be done. You can kind of make too many and then just feel depressed about you not being able to follow them, or they're just insurmountable. They're too difficult. So just being very wise and being very careful about any kind of habit that you're trying to change, and you're making a promise to yourself to keep that change up for a period of time. So yeah, I just want to encourage that. These are just some words to reflect on. So anything that's been helpful, please take with you. Anything that has not, then feel free to leave behind.